This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about food choices. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. A lot of people want to eat food that's grown in a sustainable way, with less impact on the environment and the climate. Food that comes from smaller farms that produce organic vegetables, cage-free eggs, grass-fed beef, and where animals have space to roam around. 4 years ago, reporter Alan Yu visited such a farm in Virginia, near Charlottesville. It was run by a charismatic new farmer, excited to show off his land. His chickens were running around on lush pasture.
This grass is too tall, but like this is a cattleman's dream. It's a little bit weedy.
The chickens also fertilized the ground. Nearby, pigs roamed in a fenced-in pen. Chris Newman had left behind a job in tech to follow his dream of farming and making sustainable food more affordable for more people.
A lot of my family, a lot of people I grew up with, you know, in my neighborhood in Southeast DC, they can't afford this stuff.
His ambitions went way beyond this farm.
It's not just about our happy damn chickens. No, this is about, how do we fix this system?
He wanted to fix the system in a way that honored his Black and Indigenous roots by getting more people of color into farming. Right now, about 95% of the people who run farms in the U.S. are white.
For me, it's, you know, people of color, it's about getting them onto the field, and it's about recognizing that there are barriers there for them that aren't there for other people, and that, you know, we need that lift because it's, the world is not our oyster.
So, a farm with a big mission. Alan Yu recently went back to Silvanakwa to check in on Chris and his dreams because the farm had grown. And this time, Alan discovered a bit of a different story, a tangled web of never-ending work, passion, and a lot of drama.
Okay, so we're going to jump out.
Silvanakwa Farms had moved to a different part of Virginia. Chris got a great deal on a lease and now has 10 times the amount of land to work with. Once again, we went on a tour. He has about 500 chickens in the first field he shows me. He still keeps them outside in big sheltered containers called chicken tractors. They can be moved around, they have a roof but no floor. So chickens are sheltered from the elements but still get to enjoy the grass.
But this is why our grass is so thick and lush, because these guys are here.
In a different field, Chris has another few hundred hens that he raises for eggs. Those hens have access to a big patch of grass, and for shelter and egg laying, they have trailers that Chris calls henmobiles.
But yeah, these guys are all milling about. They've got two henmobiles that they're going to be in for the rest of the year until the winter, at which point they're going to go into their hoop house, and then that's going to be where they live forever and ever.
When I took a closer look at the inside of the henmobiles, I noticed that the floors were covered in mud. So I asked Chris. He told me, actually, it's poop, but it's there for a reason.
It's more for the weight. Keeps it from blowing over. Yeah, we've had the one that you saw out in the field that was damaged, like that one blew over. And when they blow over, like it's a friggin' disaster. And I'll scrape some of it off the top, but like that base weight is really, really handy.
In yet another field, Chris has about 70 pigs who live in a pen behind an electric fence, but also have access to the woods.
They're perfectly happy in here. They almost prefer, like if you were to open this up and allow them out, they'd spend most of their time in here because they like the mud, they like dust. Pigs are funny like that.
His prices are about the same as what they were 4 years ago. $6 for a dozen eggs, for example. He has a base of customers who buy almost all the food he produces. And quite a lot of things sell out quickly.
I don't want to be the guy selling $12 dozen eggs. Like, I can't do that. Like, I could do that physically, but I can't sleep at night.
Chris wants to keep his food affordable, and he sees his farm as an agent for change. For example, he has a mutual aid program where customers can help him donate his harvest to various organizations in the area that give food to people in need. Another big goal for Chris is to support other people of color who want to get into farming. During both of my visits with Chris, he was really passionate about his goals and mission to make an impact. He writes a lot about this on social media. But then I started seeing things online that suggested that all was not as utopian as it seemed at Sylvanaqua Farms. I reached out to people who had worked there. One of them is Valerie Proctor. Val is part of the same tribal nation as Chris, the Piscataway, and was attracted by Chris's larger mission.
For the first time, there was a farmer that actually cared about giving food to people who were underserved and really critiqued the system that we live in. And I hadn't seen any farmer do that before, and it seemed like a breath of fresh air.
Val is 27, and they had a few years of experience doing farm work, which included working with pigs and chickens. Val started working at Sylvanaqua in the spring of 2020, along with two other people.
It seemed massive to me because of where I had come from prior to that was much smaller, like much smaller scale than that.
But despite the size of the farm, Val observed that the chickens did not seem to have all that much space.
They were certainly stocked, like overstocked. It seemed like it to me. It didn't seem like they were the absolute happiest, but I knew that they were happy to be on grass at least and not in a factory like so many other farms.
And this is what they said about Chris.
Chris is like a very charismatic leader. He has like a sense of humor that keeps you laughing, and he has a lot of energy, very high functioning. But sometimes he would expect that same high-functioning behavior out of everybody else.
One of the other farmers who joined right before Val, Xander Berry, said the same thing. Xander told me about her first training shift with Chris, carrying buckets of animal feed.
Taking 2 30- or 40-pound buckets at a time and just jogging across the pasture.
She says she could do it, but it was difficult for her in a way that it was not for Chris. She's fit, but the combined weight of two buckets is more than half her body weight.
I really wanted to earn my spot, earn my keep, and that was just important to me because I thought the work that I was doing was incredibly important.
She says later that atmosphere led to employees feeling competitive with each other. The work days were long and physically exhausting. She says she became aggressive to her colleagues from the stress and the workload.
I really started to resent the little things if they didn't, you know, hold themselves to the same standards that I held myself to.
Months after Xander joined, in fall 2020, Jaime Escobedo joined the farm. He's 40, older than Xander or Val, and he had more farming and business experience. He says he noticed quickly that the farm was not doing all the things it promised, especially in terms of how livestock is kept.
I guess the biggest thing I want to put out there is just because they were outside does not make it better than factory farming. I have seen factory farming practices that were much cleaner and much more humane than him.
Remember the question I asked Chris about the floor in the henmobiles? He told me, yes, it was poop, but it was there to stop the henmobile from falling over. Jaime says it should not be like that.
His egg program is one of the biggest things he's proud of. And these chicken coops, they're poorly built and at least stocked 3 times more than they should have been. So as a result, they were just moving shitmobiles. You know, excuse my foreign language, but there's no better way to describe it.
Jaime cited a common standard for how much indoor space a chicken should have, around 2 square feet per bird.
Mostly so that at night, they all can find a spot to sleep and not poop on each other. The way Chris had it, that was impossible.
Jaime also says Chris has too many chickens for the amount of land available.
A lot of people who try to farm the way Chris does go give much more space.
As for the pigs, Jaime says the males were not separate from the females, and they were not castrated as soon as they should have been, leading to uncontrolled breeding and inbreeding.
He's talking about just a couple of hot wire lines trying to keep in a horde of pigs. Not a herd, a horde. It was ridiculous. I saw mother pigs start eating baby pigs. because of the confinement and the overbreeding and the incest.
In January 2021, Chris restructured his business, creating three distinct parts: business, produce, and livestock. They also scaled up, got more animals, and took more orders. But remember, Chris wanted to use his farm to address some of the bigger issues with farming in the U.S.
For me, it's, you know, people of color, it's about getting them onto the field, and it's about recognizing that there are barriers there for them that aren't there for other people, and that, you know, we need that lift.
He imagined a network of farms growing out of Sylvan Aqua, run and owned by people of color. To get this going, he put one of the new employees, who joined the same time Xander did, in charge of the now larger livestock operation. Chris gave them a $50,000 loan for animal feed, the commute, whatever Xander and Jaime would need. He gave them the livestock operation and a model for how to run it, and now they could spread their wings. Xander says there were two problems. The money was not enough, and there was far too much work.
When the animals ran out of food, it was kind of a race to get to Tractor Supply and maybe pick up some feed, or we would run out and we would have to not feed the animals for like a day or two. And that was something that stressed me out.
She says there was this one time when the team slaughtered 400 chickens, put them in the cooler, but did not check on them for 4 days, because they simply did not have the time. When the team got back to handle the chickens, they had gone bad and could not be sold.
And we threw all 400 of them into a pile outside. I was part of raising them since day two, day three, and I saw all of my work, all of those hours of heartache, all of those hours of moving the tractors, all of the feed, all of it. I saw the cost of feed. I saw all of it, just all in a pile.
With this going on, Xander, Val, Jaime, and some other employees got together and made a proposal for a leadership model where they would have more power to make decisions. During this time, they vented to each other out of frustration and mentioned setting the animals in their operation free.
If Chris was going to take it back over, then he should have to start from scratch like we did.
Chris found out. He fired 4 people, including Xander. The others, including Jaime and Val, resigned. Chris forgave the $50,000 loan and gave the people he fired a severance package. And then it led to a more public confrontation where Chris and his wife called the police on his former employees. A place that felt like an inspiration, a force for positive change, suddenly looked very different. Doing all the things Chris set out to accomplish is a huge lift. Several small, sustainable farmers confirmed this. Farmers have to make trade-offs between aspirations and reality, all while navigating thin profit margins, long work days, and strict regulations that govern the sale of produce and meat. Rebecca Thistlethwaite knows all of this firsthand. She used to own and run an organic poultry and livestock farm about an hour and a half south of San Francisco. Now she's a farm business consultant. She gave me an example, something that happened during the Great Recession of 2008, when the cost of organic feed for livestock doubled. Non-organic feed would be cheaper, but their whole brand was about being organic.
And so we had to think really long and hard if our customer base really cared about that, or if they wanted to see us stay in business and keep animals out on pasture. And so we decided to drop our organic certification at that point because it was the only way to continue operating. We were able to source non-GMO grain that was local at the very least. It was better than nothing, but it was kind of a gut-wrenching decision for us to make.
And just a year or two later, she could not find land that she could either lease long-term or buy close to the San Francisco Bay Area where their customers were, and she had to give up the farm. A lot of farms fail because it's hard to make it work without a lot of inherited land and or money. The number of farm bankruptcies in the U.S. reached an 8-year high in 2019. The number of farms in the U.S. has continually gone down over time since the 1920s. So what happened at Sylvanaqua after the dramatic showdown between Chris and his former employees? The former employees left and have not seen each other in person since.
And we all just dispersed into the wind.
It was really hard for me to accept the reality that Sylvanaqua is not what I thought it was based on what I saw on social media.
After what happened at Sylvanaqua, I kind of gave up on farming. I don't know if it's permanent, but it feels like it.
Jaime says part of the problem behind all the drama at Sylvanaqua is that farming is really hard, and Chris was in over his head.
I will give him that. He is definitely one of the hardest working people I ever met. It's just a lot of wasted energy. He made every mistake new small businesses and new small farms make. He just made them all. If you're talking about just putting a seed in the ground, yeah, that's easy. You're talking about just throwing corn in some grass for the chickens to eat? Yeah, that's easy. But to turn that into a business? No, dude, that's hard.
Jaime says the problem with Chris is that Chris did not listen to the people he hired. Jaime says Chris had too much ego. And Chris actually agreed with this. He told me his ego was a large part of the issues with his staff.
You've got people who've been systematically denied opportunities, or so they say. So, you know, I was going to be the guy that gave them that chance. And I think there's some ego in that that I kind of had to get over. Like, you know, I was going to be the hero. You know, these other people never gave you a chance. I'm going to be the guy that gave you a chance. Like, I can't pretend there was no hubris in that.
He says, yes, all the problems that Jaime and Val and Xander described did happen at Sylvanaqua Farms. Chris says he put the wrong people in the wrong positions, and they should not have been responsible for running the operation.
I put them in a place where they shouldn't have been in the first place, and that was my fault.
This is where Jaime and Chris disagree. Jaime says Chris was the boss, the owner, the person whose vision and direction formed the base of the entire operation, even if he put someone else in charge. Despite everything that happened, Chris still believes in his farm. He is going to keep farming, and he still wants to scale up like he had talked about.
The idea was to create this network of BIPOC-led businesses that were pursuing food sovereignty in the Chesapeake region with this model. And the model I still believe in.
That story was reported by Alan Yu.